We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Hope your Monday's off to a good start. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, as you know, they join us on the Shell Penzoil Performance Line. Mike, you look so tan. You look like, you know, with your beard. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. But during the pandemic, you have done well, my friend. You look like some sort of Greek fisherman with the beard and the tan and the curly hair. You should be atop the Acropolis.
The tan happens every year because I sit out in the sun. The beard is...
Really? Is that how that works? I had no idea.
It's very simple.
Breaking news from Mike Golic. The sun tans your skin.
The beard is the new thing. I'm 57, and this is the first time I've ever tried to grow a beard, because I tried a mustache one time. And walked out and showed my wife, and she didn't say a word. She just laughed hysterically. So I put my tail between my legs and went and shaved it off and never tried again.
And that was that.
But with the quarantine, I went with the quarantine beard, first time ever, and it came in actually just how I wanted. You know, when most guys are like, oh, God, I don't want any gray. I want it, man. I was going to say, Trey.
I'm good.
And Mike, I mean, just hair itself.
I've always said, though, as a 30-year-old who's had to live defined by the hair on his chin and not on the top of his head, I've always said I relish the day when the touch of gray will start to make its way in. Because I think the salt and pepper beard is an elite look.
I'm so excited. I said I want one of two looks. The first to start, I wanted to look like the Dos Equis man. And I think I'm getting there with the salt and pepper in the head and the beard. And then eventually, when I lose all the dark hair and it's just all white, I want to get that beard. I want to be Moses.
Yeah, you got to let it rock out a little bit longer.
You've got to stop cutting your hair. I got to lose the rest of the color first. As soon as it's all like your hair, quite honestly, Hal.
Thanks, Mike.
I'll let everything grow, and I'll get myself a walking stick or a staff and walk around with a robe on and just be Moses.
It's why he looks exceptionally tan, too, right now, is because you've got so much white in the beard. It's great pop.
Because apparently he was out in the sun.
Out in the sun. All I'll do later in life is recite Ten Commandment lines.
Thou shalt not.
That's all I'm going to do.
You'll be recapping your Zlatan moment?
Well, there you go.
So we got a lot to get to, as we had the PGA Tour return over the weekend. Daniel Berger won. Or should I say the 17th Cup won? I mean, my God. The hole on the 17th green, the cup itself at Colonial, determined who won the event. Xander Schauffele had a two-footer?
After making the two previous holes, I think a 25-footer and a 30-some-footer to stay at 15 under and tied, and then he misses what was well within the friendship circle of us. If we were out golfing, we'd have picked up. He missed that. It hurt some others as well. So it was, you know, good first event, a lot of good golf. I mean, a lot of monster names, and then two at the top were, unfortunately, I think the casual fan hasn't really heard of Morikawa and Berger. But still a lot of really good golf, I thought.
And then Morikawa on the first playoff hole did the exact same thing on 17, just horseshoed it out. But Berger goes ahead and wins. And as you said, that was his third career tournament win over this weekend. And it's his third career win during the second week of June. The other two had come in 2016 and 2017, at the FedEx St. Jude's Classic. So that's proof Daniel Berger just likes this time of year. Proof is brought to you by Pennzoil. Proof is brought to you by Pennzoil. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W.
So a quick shout out, because we talked PGA, we also talked NASCAR, which has been running smoothly. Denny Hamlin wins in Homestead. I'm giving a shout out for fishing. The Bassmasters was over the weekend as well. It was on ESPN2. And Buddy Gross, a guy who was in 10th place on the last day, 7 pounds back, and he came back with an incredible stringer and won by a pound. So good job out of him for their days on the lake out in Alabama there for the Bassmaster. It was a lot of fun. Again, our buddy Mark Zona on the call there, and it was a I love watching that. I love bass fishing. I love doing it. So well, it was cool to watch.
And a lot of these are great, and it's so different than what we're getting ready for this fall, because I would say all of these sports can be passive watches. Like one of my favorite things about golf being back is the golf nap on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
I get up, I do my thing in the morning, start watching golf, I turn it on. Eventually, I am lulled to sleep by the sounds of their voices, and I can awake for the end of the round to watch that 17th cup dummy everybody over the course of the end of that. But with everything that we're getting ready to have come up, whether it's the NBA and the bubble return, certainly the NHL, all these things that are going to be a lot more focused, even you know tournament style like we've seen from soccer, it's a much more active watch.
Yeah,
it's just a different sporting experience. And then you get to the NFL, which is certainly the granddaddy of them all when it comes to that and some of the things that we're preparing for.
And hopefully
for
college
season.
Football as well. You know, we'll see where that's going as we're getting multiple schools with multiple positive tests for the COVID. So we will see where that ends up.
So the PGA Tour is back. The NBA, we believe, is heading back. Major League Baseball will be shoved down the players' throats to get back.
Right.
And then we have the NFL, again, having the longest runway to get this thing going. But while we're waiting for training camps to start at the end of next month and waiting still for some players to sign contracts, we're seeing how so many players, specifically so many white players, are joining their brothers in arms in terms of their teammates and fighting for the causes that they believe in. And two stars over the weekend had some very interesting responses to some of their followers on Twitter, both J.J. Watt in Houston and Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. Both of them at one point said, you know, to a fan, you know, the fans had tweeted them saying, I know that Baker Mayfield won't be one of those guys kneeling or J.J. Watt won't be kneeling during the national anthem. And they both said, oh, yeah. You better believe we are. We're going to show support for our people who understand and feel like they have been wronged in all of this, and they want to bring attention to this. And both J.J. Watt and Baker Mayfield shut down those Twitter followers and said, no. That's not what this is about, and we respect what they're going to do.
Yeah, and so to be clear in all this and differentiating them, Baker basically said he is absolutely going to kneel.
Yes.
JJ said, you don't speak for me, and if you think that kneeling is about disrespecting the flag, you haven't been listening. So JJ Watt didn't commit to kneeling, which is something that could sound like a headline, but still, JJ Watt speaking out about this at all would have been one of my more unlikely bets going into this, just because JJ Watt has never been a guy that's really strayed in that path one way or another. He's been a guy that's gone out there, played football, certainly been very charitable. We know obviously a lot of the things that have been a part of his past and some of the relief efforts he's helped with in Houston, but straying out in this way and offering an opinion on this wasn't something I expected from the three-time defensive player of the year.
So again, actually what they said was for Baker Mayfield, someone, you know, posting about in answering a post from a fan on his Instagram about Saturday that pleaded for him not to kneel, Mayfield responded, pull your head out, I absolutely am. And in response to a person tweeting at J.J. Watt, pretty sure J.J. Watt would not be taking a knee during the national anthem. J.J. said, if you still think it's about disrespecting the flag or our military, you clearly haven't been listening. That's what he tweeted. I think where we are, let's all go back to 2016, and I would say for certainly the white players, and I'm sure white America who watch the NFL, it got uncomfortable, right? I mean, it was like, wait a minute, somebody's kneeling during the national anthem. Now more players are kneeling during the national anthem. I think there was a lot of white players who weren't sure what to do. You know, they didn't kneel, but they wanted to support their teammates. You know, Chris Long was a guy who didn't kneel, but he put his hand on his teammate who was kneeling and talked about supporting. And I do think there were a lot of white guys who weren't sure what to do. Fast forward 4 years. And I think, you know, a lot of the white players in the NFL are like, okay, you know, now we've seen this happen. We hear what our teammates are saying, and they're in a completely different position on how they're reacting to this 4 years later than it was in 2016.
Well, I mean, to be frank with it, it's not as scary of a prospect anymore, right? Like, I think the barrier to entry in this conversation has been lowered a lot. And we've heard people say it's the popular thing. It's all these things right now. Right now, it is the majority opinion. It is, well, yes, we absolutely understand what they're talking about with these protests, all the things that go along with it. And so jumping on now, while it's great that they're supporting in all these things, it's not nearly at the, you know, for some of these guys, social cost that it would have come at, or they would have perceived it as back in 2016, back in 2017, when this was all originally happening. So it's an easier time to come in this. I don't think it makes it any less impactful because we've always talked about more voices joining this cause and being involved in material ways and real ways and continuing to make it an issue that matters to you. Like, that's what Chris Long did.
Right.
Was, as someone who was an ally in this, made it an issue that mattered to him, spoke on it when he was given the opportunity and the platform, supported Malcolm Jenkins and other guys that were leading the cause in this fight. So those are all of the ways that still need to be a part of this process, whether Baker Mayfield and others choose to kneel or not.
But there's something else that's sort of an underlying current, in my opinion, on this, and I want to get your guys' take on this, is there was a time in 2016 when if you did something, you were waiting for something to happen. And you were concerned about how you would feel and how certain would people feel about that. And that would be the president tweeting about something, mm-hmm. right? And just a couple of weeks ago when Drew Brees misspoke and did not say the thing at the worst possible time, you know, and he said, no, I was wrong. And obviously he's walked that back several times over. And then the president, President Trump, tweeted at him and said, you had nothing to apologize for. And Drew Brees went right back at the president and said, no, I was wrong, and I needed to do this. It feels – because, listen, there were stories from so many people that owners and people were concerned what would happen if the president tweeted something negative about what's going on. It doesn't feel like that's something they're concerned about.
I'm not saying that about the owners yet. Yeah. They have given me
not
no –
I'm talking about the players.
No, that's where I'm going.
Yeah.
The players – I don't know if they cared back then, quite honestly. I don't know. Because as soon as the president came out and called them all, you know, SOBs and they should, you know, you owners, you should fire them, what did all the players do then? All the players knelt against what he said, not for what the cause that was going on at that point. So I don't know if the players care, maybe a little bit less, Trey, to your point, but it's to me, it's still the owners. What do the owners think? Because there's a lot of owners, you know, out there that were, don't kneel. We're against that. Don't do it.
Jerry Jones said specifically, right. If you kneel, you're not going to play
for
the
Cowboys. And we haven't heard from them. So
we've heard from one.
Well, we heard from two. Shad Khan.
Steve Bisciotti also spoke.
Yes, Steve Bisciotti put that up.
So we've heard from a few, but do the owners not care as much? Because we've heard the president say he's not going to watch the NFL. He's not going to watch soccer if they're going to kneel. And certainly that's fine. He has every right to not do that if he doesn't want to. But are the – because the owners, without question, were intimidated by that years ago.
Yeah.
Are they now? And we still don't know because the only reaction we have is a video by Roger Goodell that he told only a handful of owners he was going to do. So we still don't know what a lot of the other owners think about this.
Yeah, we've heard from Bisciotti. We've heard from Shad Khan and Amy Adams, the controlling owner of the Tennessee Titans. But the part about Roger Goodell doing it, I think, whether you feel like he had to after the players did their video first or not, is still impactful because he said we were wrong.
Yeah,
he said we were wrong. We should not have done that, and we will support their. Mm-hmm. We will support
that. Is a change. You're right.
We will support their willingness to protest in peaceful protest in the way they deem necessary. That is a significant change.
Yep, that's true.
It's a significant change, and one will wait to see if they follow through on because. Again, while kneeling will still be, I guess this is the part I'll be interested to see is if players go forward with kneeling, is it still as publicly abrasive in the way that drew the spotlight? Because that was the intention of that form of peaceful protest was to do it in a space that would create conversation because there were going to be some people upset about it. Like that is why the conversation lasted as long as it did. And that's why the spotlight got so bright is because there was enough conflict in that space over what was happening. Will this be something that because it's more widely accepted now, maybe lessens the impact of that and players look and say, all right, well, we've got to find another way to get our message across. If it's not, maybe at this point we've crossed that bridge where the issue that was at the heart of the protest to begin with is more understood now and people will accept that and will go forward and will discuss that issue and not get caught up in all of the dumb, you know, things that we made the debate about that weren't anything it was actually about.
I'd be interested in talking to like a Malcolm Jenkins about that because that was the reason that Cap started it and others did it was to go get the wow effect, right? Isn't that what a protest and a peaceful protest is about? Grabbing attention. So now they have the attention. So I do wonder from a Malcolm Jenkins or others, Adrian Peterson said he was going to kneel.
Absolutely. He said he was going to kneel.
Well, no, but is that still going to be the effective way because everybody is kind of used to that now? Or is there going to be another way to kind of grab attention to this? Or is it something that we're just going to keep doing because it'll keep it, keep our subject line in the spotlight?
And maybe it's my own just seeing everything else and seeing what a rising tide in favor of finally accepting and right. maybe starting yep. to address the issues that were at the core of the protest, you know, the police brutality, the injustice against black people being done. Maybe I'm mistaking that for there being a lessening of the animosity on the other side that we've seen. You mentioned, you know, certainly there were the tweets from the president saying he wasn't going to watch the NFL. We've seen other people still responding. I mean, Drew Brees, he didn't misspeak when he talked about that. He said exactly what he meant in that regard and was wrong and acknowledged such later on and made that turn pretty quickly going from that to tweeting back at the president and all of that. But Drew Brees spoke in the way I'm sure a lot of people still feel about this. And so maybe I'm underselling what kneeling will have what kneeling will do and the kind of impact it will still have even in 2020.
All right. So let me ask you this question, right? Because I think a lot of people were concerned because there was a dip that year in the ratings in the NFL, because of a lot of different things going on. If there is a continued barrage of tweets from certain people, about kneeling in the NFL, do you think it's going to have any effect on the ratings whatsoever?
No, I
watching
don't.
Football?
I don't. One of the reasons is that this is a weird year of we haven't had sports. And we're hopefully going to get it all back, and fans probably aren't going to be going, or they're not going to be going. Now we'll see what happens in the state of Texas, where they're saying maybe half the stands can be filled, and I think eventually you'll get more and more fans. But if fans could
Texas
go to the game,
barreling forward as the cases continue to rise,
and I think because of that as well, people can't go to the games. I think the ratings will be pretty high.
I think they will too. I think it's also important to remember, and like we bring this up pretty often, but it is an election year. So the things that may naturally come with that shouldn't be read into as cause and effect in this one way that I feel like we went through that exercise last time. We disproved a lot of the ways that people thought that actually had an effect on it. Part of the reason that ownership, I think, lives less in fear of the tweet that might eventually come from the president is because the NFLPA and the NFL, I think this was in a Monday Morning Quarterback article referencing back then that they were gathering a lot of information from third-party services about the effect or non-effect that actually ended up coming from any of these tweets or the attention. And so they realized that those tweets were not nearly as detrimental to their bottom line as they thought, as the perception was out there. So once you kind of quell that idea for the people in power there, maybe it makes it easier for them going forward to endorse the things that their players are trying to get out here and support the movement that these guys are trying to get everyone behind.
Golic & Wingo is presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. So that's the situation with the NFL. Meanwhile, we still have the situation going on in college football as they're trying to figure out a way to get back and going. And we've seen different practices put in place in different schools with completely different results.
Yeah, I mean, and for the most part, I think it's gone the way a lot of us thought. You're bringing in now, in this sport of football, the most athletes back. And in this sport, particularly in college, the most of any. Because we talk about the NFL, you're going to bring back, 90 to begin with. In college, it's 100 or more. You know, you have 85 scholarship athletes, and then you have walk-ons and others. You have more. So you're bringing in the most people. And through the testing that we've heard from different schools, we have seen multiple positive tests. And I don't think that surprised any of us because they were testing and they were all coming from different parts of the country, and you figured that may happen. We are a little stunned at the University of Houston, where they had 6 positive tests, symptomatic, not asymptomatic, but symptomatic. And they didn't test everybody. They only tested you if your temperature was above the 100.3 or whatever that number is. Then you got tested, which Mike blows our mind. I mean, at least that initial coming back to the campus to get somebody who's symptomatic and or asymptomatic to separate them, because it's not a mark against your program if players come back and they test positive. It just to me, it's like, okay, we got it early here to quarantine them, because to think all these players are going to come back from around the country and you're not going to get multiple positive tests is fool's gold. So, but the way Houston went about it just makes no sense at all.
It's idiotic. They have to remedy it going forward. That's why I'm a little less inclined to sound the full version of the alarms, just because the way they went about this was so ill-conceived. I understand there's no uniform policy for the NCAA or even the conferences, but at the very least, what we've seen as more often than not the standard practice by schools that are doing this and having people start to come back on campus has been, we test everybody on the way into this. What it leads us to, the interesting discussion about Ohio State that I know we're going to get back to in a little bit, and the waiver, not waiver.
The Buckeye pledge.
The Buckeye pledge that they had guys sign. And we talked about its legal viability going forward, and I still wanted hear maybe a more concrete answer, because I've heard mixed opinions from people with law in their background saying that this wouldn't hold weight if it were to go to court, if something were to come up.
Amy Trask had a great quote
about that. Releasing them from liability. But as someone said, and Gene Smith told Heather Dinich, they don't view this as a legal document or anything like that. Some, multiple people have pointed out, then why did minors need a parent to sign it?
Yeah.
Like, if it wasn't a legal document, why did minors need it? If it was just a pledge, why would a minor need a parent to sign it? And that's something I don't have an answer for.
Yeah, I don't know if there is a different ramification for something that's legal or just that you can't sign off on anything.
It's like a permission slip.
Permission slip?
I mean,
like when you go to, like, on a field trip as a 14-year-old, you can't sign it yourself. You have to have a parent to get it. And that's right. I'm not sure that's legal.
Yeah, I'm with you, Mike. I don't know the answer to that, because I thought of that as well. We got some tweets about it, but we're in a situation where we can try and find that answer out. Ohio State is saying up and down, this is not a legal document. This is just a pledge to our players that they promise to follow all the guidelines, you know, that have been provided by us in the state, you know, to try and stop the spread of COVID-19.
The one thing we're learning during this time is we don't know a lot.
No.
You know, I mean,
learning that, we knew that.
That's a very interesting question, and I wish I had more of an answer at that point, but I'd like to find out, because you're right, it's pretty clear from everybody saying there's no way this can be legally binding.
I don't know if there's no way. There's a bunch of very gray ways how it interacts with the scholarship language and all this, because again, during her time as an NCAA student athlete, and I'll say athlete because I think the term student athlete's a farce, but during her time as an athlete with the NCAA, you sign a lot of waivers in association with your scholarship, and you get used to seeing certain things, and this feels different even though the sentiment seems the same.
Yeah. So we'll see if we can find a way to parse that going forward, because we parse everything else. But coming up next, would the NBA returning hurt the message that most of its players are trying to convey? We'll get to that next with our guest, Golic and Wingo, on ESPN Radio and on ESPN2.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically, all on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
All right, Golic and Wingo here with you on a Monday morning. Hope you and yours are well and safe and getting back to enjoy a little bit of what's going on over the weekend. NASCAR, another race. PGA Tour came back. Daniel Berger, as you said, wins the Charles Schwab Challenge in the first playoff hole at Colonial. And then there's the NBA, maybe. Going back to the bubble scenario. So for that, the long gone summer, lots of things going on in Major League Baseball. We're always delighted to talk to our good friend, Michael Wilbon. Michael, thanks for joining us this morning. I guess first and foremost, where are you and what you're hearing from players like Kyrie Irving and Dwight Howard, who are suddenly saying, hold up, is it really in our best interest to go back and play basketball right now because they're afraid it would take the focus off what has been the attention of most people in this country right now is the fact that the social injustices that have been done against people of color in this country, specifically by people of by members of the police.
Well, good morning first. I'm in a place where I needed to listen to people last night who have more credibility, and I know that sounds harsh, but that's how I mean it, with me and most of the basketball world, and Kyrie Irving and Dwight Howard. They're not going to be my discussion leaders. They may be the discussion leaders. I got to hear from some other people who are less agenda driven than those two often seem to be. But in listening to others, one of the things they're saying too, the people I'm listening to, is listen. Kyrie Irving and Dwight Howard cannot frame this discussion, but this discussion is a lot larger than them. The discussion is serious. It's more than just, oh, here's somebody agitating for a conference call. People are questioning. One of the things and there are two different dynamics going on, at least. One is the exact social justice piece of this that you mentioned. And the other is the execution of the bubble. Like, can it be done in the way that have been that the league and the players project, anticipate? That's the goal they've set. But how reasonable is that? Charles Barkley gave voice to this over a month ago, and Charles and I have both been here in Arizona since for the whole pandemic, essentially. And we have talked. And one evening I listened to Charles because I kept saying, Chuck, what are you doing? They're going to play, and you're saying you wouldn't do this. And it's one of those conversations, I know you guys have had them, where you listen to somebody who really has sat and thought about what seems to be the opposing view. It's not the popular view, and it's somebody going the other way. And Charles ticked off about 8 or 9 reasons in bullet point form as to why he would not restart the season. And I remember at the end of it just saying, damn, this is an incredibly persuasive argument. And at the time, George Floyd had not been murdered yet. That's come up since the NBA has announced its restart. But now, so you've got that piece, and you've got, the original thought of, wait a minute, I mean, the bubble sounds nice, but how are you going to do this? And so players were talking all along. This is not like baseball where you have these two sides and it's protracted disagreement over money. Players have been talking all along, and some guys were not in favor of it all along. And now you have that growing chorus since the 2 weeks that have changed the world. And the NBA is caught in it, and I don't know where it's going from here.
Well, Patrick Beverley seems to think he knows, because a lot of people that were talking publicly, and Patrick Beverley, basically, I'm paraphrasing, said, we haven't heard from LeBron, but whatever LeBron says basically goes. How true do you think that statement is?
Yeah, I saw that tweet. Look, I've been waiting for someone of real impact, influence, from the Lakers or the Clippers or the Raptors or the Bucks. Teams that have, that know, their players know they have a real shot or feel that way. What are their players saying? And again, I know Dwight Howard's on the Lakers. It's interesting because you see that underline all last night. I was watching, stuff on the network, God knows, at 4 o'clock this morning. And the underline, Lakers not fractured. And they're like, wait a minute, Dwight Howard is going the other way. Because when it comes to influence, Dwight Howard doesn't really have that much. And so not anymore, not now, if he ever did, in terms of these kind of weighty issues. So I want to hear from but Pat Beverly's tweet. I remember I nodded last night to say, amen, I think that's right. But, LeBron's got to be on some of these calls. He knows what's going on. I'm not the only one who's having his mind, if not changed, certainly just given pause to say, okay. And I agree philosophically with what Austin Rivers had to say. When he said, wait a minute, we can call more attention to our cause here, social injustice, to that part of the agenda by playing. And so he disagreed fundamentally, and I agree fundamentally and philosophically with Austin Rivers. But it's more complex than that.
It certainly is, Michael. And as Michael Wilbon joins us here on Golic and Wingo, what you brought up is how long that this had been going on, even back before the murder of George Floyd. But the vote by the NBA Players Association took place after that. And I'm still wondering, and I'm not sure if you have any inkling as to why these issues weren't voiced louder by the players before that vote took place. Why?
I don't know what date. Do you know what date that vote took place?
I want to say it was about a week ago, around June 5th.
Was it a week ago? I mean, but look, every day, this moves. This moves. It moves the world. I mean, I don't remember where we were, you know, like if we were 3 days removed from seeing that video, like where were we in this timeline at the time? And again, players were, all along, players were talking, and players were talking with Adam. Silver, you know, with Michelle Roberts. I mean, it's not like they just sort of came together at the beginning of a season. And so we sort of advanced to a place slowly. I mean, who in the world knew where we were going to wind up with this? Well, first of all, we still know we're going to wind up with it. Who in the world knew we'd get to this point? So, okay, the vote may have been taken, but the conversation, it didn't end with that. And I don't think the conversation can end. One of the things we're talking about now is tough conversations. Well, the NBA's having one now. And again, it doesn't just relate to the aftermath of George Floyd. The bubble, again, I had people tell me at the time and talk to Adam Silver. People I know had Adam's ear on this. And we know that Adam had some trepidation at the beginning because he said, if we're going to shut it down for one positive test, then we can't go down that road. So this was out there anyway. This conversation was out there, and prominent people of the NBA community were having it. But you know what? Just like everything else, why did states reopen when they did? Money. People needed to work. That's the primary reason. The byproduct is, they went to beaches and they went to restaurants again, and now we've got these spikes from sea to shining sea in this country. Why did that happen? Money. The NBA doesn't want to lose. I don't know what the numbers are. You hear all kinds of stuff, you know, paybacks, whatever, $600 million, $700 million. Once again, hundreds of millions of dollars. And I'm not going to be flip and say, that can't be the driving determinant. The hell of that? It always is.
Right.
So look at baseball. Baseball is just on the front end. And it's contentious in a way that people just don't want to stomach. Basketballs now is a different, I'm not even calling it a disagreement, even though people are on opposite sides. They're going to have to talk this out. And I don't know where they go from here. I don't know if it's as simple as, wait a minute, we've still got a majority of the players, and we got the most powerful players, and we're going to power this through. And if they do, is that the smart thing? I don't know that it is.
Well, there's a conversation they're going to need to have, and we're still trying to figure out whether or not baseball will actually ever have a face-to-face conversation with each other, or it will be unilaterally imposed on the players. This is what we're playing, and then that will lead to all kinds of issues going forward. So let's focus on something that I know you caught your eye and were a big part of. We saw Long Gone Summer last night, the 30 for 30, on the Sosa-McGuire home run chase of 1998. As someone who is from Chicago and is such a Cubs fan, to live through that, especially that moment in June, because it really was McGuire and Griffey, and then Sammy in today's parlance said, hold my beer, and went 20 strong in that 1 month of June. And that really sort of jump-started the whole thing, which led to the 70 and 66. That was the flashpoint when Sammy jumped into this thing and said, hey, wait a minute, there's a three-party system here now.
You know, I was thinking about it because of the way we now view that summer as opposed to when it was happening.
Right.
I've put that on the back shelf. I mean, of my Chicago, you know, fanatic memories and the things I was there for, I don't even like that is even it isn't among the, you know, it's not up there with the six Bulls championships. And we just relived that. It's not up there with the Bears of 85. It's not up there with the Cubs of, you know, but yet at the time, Tony and I talked about this Friday, and I think the question was, given what we know now, is it okay still to celebrate 98, the summer of 98? And our answers were kind of like, eh. My heart wasn't in it. And so when I watched last night, I remember I was a newlywed, and I remember telling my wife, who didn't grow up with baseball in Washington, because she's of an age where she didn't have baseball in Washington. I said, we're going to get on a plane today on a Saturday morning. I remember calling the Cubs, buying a couple of tickets, and it's an hour and a half flight from D.C., and it was a 1:30 game, and we woke up early, and I said, we're going to Wrigley Field today. We're going to watch Sosa. We're going to watch Sammy Sosa, and we're going to hope he hits a home run, because this is the greatest thing. It reminded me last night, this thing I put aside because of what came from it ultimately was thrilling. And I was at the game covering the game for the Washington Post where McGuire hit 62. But there's so many things I forgot. Like, I didn't realize that McGuire, who was so uncomfortable, and that wasn't highlighted nearly enough for me. It was mentioned. And La Russa at one point says, thank God that Sosa was at these joint press conferences, because Mark wanted none of this. There was a reference or two to it, but it wasn't really captured to my liking. But McGuire was so good to Sosa. They were so good to each other. And we looked at the Last Dance, and we saw that as great as that was, people weren't always great with each other. These guys were look, the Cardinals and the Cubs, my God. The Cardinals and the Cubs, that's like Packers-Bears. That is so much deeper, and there's so much more hatred there for 100 years than Bulls-Pistons. And yet, those two guys. And so I think we went to a Cardinals-Cubs game at Wrigley, and I just said, we're going to see this. And we went as fans to see it. I made her go. And so I think I'm sure it was her first trip to Wrigley Field. So we have to consume this race. But then, you know, at the end of it, I'm still going. I felt good. It was like the season itself. I felt good for 2 hours watching it. And now I'm like, yeah, Sammy's not even welcome. He hasn't been to Wrigley Field.
That's crazy. That makes no sense.
Last night, the first night, I felt bad about that. I went to bed feeling awful that Sammy Sosa has been, like, in exile. I mean, it's like he's Bartman. It's and of course people don't even remember. He was on the team in 2003. He had had his best seasons already. Retired, got traded a year later. But man, I don't know what to make of it. I don't know how to get my arms around it even now.
Yeah, I just remember it was so much fun, and we know what it is and what it wasn't, but it was still just such a blast. Mike, we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Much more next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Napa Know How.
Father's Day knickknacks. That funny mug, ironic tie, or worse, IOU coupon books. It's time to get yourself something you want, Dad, like a Craftsman half-inch corded impact wrench for $99.99. It's the perfect gift to give to yourself. And while you're here, don't forget to shop all our great deals on Craftsman tools. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Offer ends 6/30/20.
Got the score, and then got the strip sack fumble recovery for the score. Boom, boom, out go the lights.
It's Golic and Wingo.
Always thought of you as a boom, boom, out go the lights kind of guy.
How I roll.
You okay there? Boom, boom, out go the lights over there?
Yeah. I like boom, boom, out go the lights.
No, we're just checking on you.
Boom, boom, out go the lights. It's a lot of times when I went up against guys in football, that's what happened. You know what I mean?
Oh, dear God. So
after the play, it was boom.
Right. I'm sorry I did this.
Out go the lights.
Now, Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. I'm so, so very... Oh, God. I almost choked to death.
Are you okay? What is happening right
this
now?
This is just what this segment is going to be. Yeah. All right. At this point, just resign ourselves to this fact. Let's talk about Sammy Sosa.
Like, can we do the Sammy Sosa?
Well, I mean, we might as well get away from it because any attempts at witty banter just got not going to happen. With my tongue.
What you? I mean, literally, your saliva just almost drowned.
I was thinking
you?
Of Bison DeChambeau again.
Yeah, we'll get back to that. Does anybody look back on 1998? I know it's a little different for you, Mike. You were young, but looking back on that. And think any less of it.
Listen.
Hell no.
No, we all know what was going on. I mean, my God, they had a spot. Chicks digged the long ball with two of the pitchers for the Braves. Everyone was trying to do it. So it was just a lot of fun. Was it artificially enhanced? I mean, yes.
My point is we didn't know at the time, or there were whispers, but we found out after that it was full-blown steroid era. Even Tony La Russa came on here on our show last week and said, to him, it does get tainted a bit looking back on what it was. Because I remember always talking to people saying, boy, if I knew now what I know now, I wouldn't have liked that so much. And I so don't want to believe them.
I don't believe them because I'm so, and you know what? Maybe the baseball fan that always yells at me in my mention is right. And I am not of a high enough order to appreciate the finer points of baseball and all that. But at some point, I think we're all big dumb animals when it comes to the way that we watch sports. And it's the reason why we can all love certain things that go on. But at the end, big, loud, and freakish will always dominate, because it's what we can identify with the least. Like when people got through all that stuff about, oh, I love Steph Curry, he's a much more accessible superstar, much more kids have a chance to be like Steph Curry than they do LeBron James, which is wrong in so many ways on its own. But at some point it's like, you know what? I want to watch to see the guy who can do the thing I can never dream of.
Correct.
Like, it'd be great for me to watch a bunch of swing offensive linemen who are like 6'4", 290 and undersized guys. That's great. Or I want to watch Larry Allen manhandle people on highlights and sprint down the field and make plays I couldn't dream of weighing 350 pounds because he's a Greek god in a process of evolution at hand. Like, I want to watch those guys, even if they're crafted in the lab.
I am shocked that you played the Larry Allen card and did not go Quentin Nelson right there. I really thought that's what you were going to say.
Listen.
I mean,
we'll see where
guys.
Quentin Nelson ends up. Larry Allen is one of the greatest linemen to ever play the game.
Landlord.
And it was a monster and just destroyed people. So
I could have said Zach Martin and it accomplished the same.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm actually shocked that you mentioned neither one of them. I'm proud of you for mentioning Larry Allen. I just didn't think that's where you were going.
Either way, you know, this is, we wanted to see this home run, or we loved seeing this home run. I thought it was fantastic. And when Sammy Sosa got into the race, how great it was. I mean, I loved it, bringing Mark McGwire along with it. It's interesting. McGwire was 6'5", 215 as a rookie.
Yeah.
And boy, did he look.
He had 49 home runs as a rookie.
As a rookie.
Set a rookie record.
Yeah.
I mean, he was always hitting those.
And we had Buster Olney on a little earlier, and we asked him if next season were to be a regular season, which we all kind of laugh at considering what's going on now. And I said, one player will hit over 60 home runs next year. Who is it? And he said, Mike Trout. Mike Trout hit 45, you know, I think it was last year, his career high. He said he's the guy. He just seems to get better and better and better every year as a guy that he thinks on a regular season could do that.
I mean, pick the greatest baseball man to do the best baseball thing seems like a pretty solid logical bet.
It does, but if you think about team construct, isn't it more likely that if they're healthy, that either Judge or Stanton would?
Well,
because they're there in that lineup to protect each other.
I think the if is too big. Yeah. They've already shown their health, and it can't last for a season, so I would not pick
them. Part of Buster's reasoning was that Angels lineup has started to get more protection for him in there. By the way, adding one to the fold for Bryson DeChambeau nicknames for being a thick golfer. We had Bryson DeChambeau in the lead. DeChambeau Flex has now entered the chat.
Oh, DeChambeau Flex. I love it. Meanwhile, much more coming on the NBA may not be coming back. We'll get to that. Stay with us.